So in about a week or two, I'm going to ask for your help. I'm going to ask for some stories to be sent to a specific email address. The reason for that is, remember the TV show Happy Days? Well, you know the Fonz, Henry Winkler, he's got a production company, and he'd like to do a television program based on stories on Coast to Coast. And it'll be styled a little like The Twilight Zone, but not quite. But it'll be pretty dramatic stuff. So as soon as they get everything together, I'll let you know what that email address is and start sending some stories, because what they'd like to do is videotape you for a pilot. And again, more information on that in a week or two. Okay, welcome back to Open Lines, and let's get right into them. League City, Texas we go, and it's Kevin's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning, George.
Morning to you. There you go. Truck driver. Those that don't know what that means.
First, I want to ask you.
Well, let me ask you real quick. What's diesel up to now?
Last time I looked, I drive a company truck, so I don't have to buy it.
Okay, well, that's good.
You'll hear it at our terminal, but I think it was at 309, I think, over in Beaumont, and it's about it runs about $3 over here in Houston right now.
Once it hits four for diesel, then we're in trouble.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, go ahead, Jeff. Thanks.
First, I wanted to ask you what John Searle is up to these days, if you have any more plans on having him on again soon.
Yeah, we will. I don't have an update with him since the last time I talked to him. But he still is trying to get people to, you know, help invest and pick up his invention and run with it. But nothing yet.
Okay. Also, I wanted to talk about one of the hosts you had last, I think it was last week when you were on vacation. I don't recall his name or who his guest was, but he was talking about pyramids.
Yeah, that was Rob Simone.
Okay. And they were talking about how in Siberia they were doing experiments with water and standing inside a pyramid, and it was freezing cold, and how they'd pick up the water and it was still liquid, and then he'd shake it or something, and all of a sudden it would freeze. And I wanted to mention that there's nothing really spectacular about that, because I've actually done that down here in Houston in my deep freeze in my garage.
Really? Well, what causes that? How does that work?
Well, I think it has something to do with, like, you can go to, you know, Target or one of these stores and buy a case of bottled water.
Okay.
Throw it in deep freeze, you know, and it sat in my deep freeze for, you know, a day or two. And I went to go get a bottle out of it to throw in my lunchbox, and I noticed it wasn't frozen. And I said, well, this is strange. And picked it up, and I just kind of tapped on the bottle, and sure enough, you can watch the ice crystals just grow in seconds and completely fill the bottle with ice.
That is strange.
And I think it has something to do with a similar principle. Like if you have a very new, clean type of coffee mug or something like that, and you put it in the microwave with water, and you turn the microwave on and you leave it in there, and it won't boil. It'll just get really, really, really hot. And they say that you're not supposed to do that, because when you reach in to get the cup and you startle the water, it'll suddenly just burst into a cloud of, you know, scalding hot water because it's been superheated.
Good point. It could be all over you then.
Right.
Okay.
I think it's something about to do with the same principle. You can buy crystal kits at the store and do the same thing. When you make the crystals, it's got a little bucket of, you know, warm crystal solution, and you just tap your finger in it, and the whole thing turns into a crystal.
Yeah, the moving has got to do something with the molecule. Something, I think, by moving it, you're doing something.
Exactly. The second thing he was talking about with the pyramids was he was saying that he could take alkaline batteries and set them under or in or next to this pyramid or something like that. One of the callers called in and said that you could drain an alkaline battery, you know, about 85, 90% drained, I think he said, and then, you know, leave it next to this pyramid, and they would recharge up to like a 40 or 50% capacity. Go ahead.
Is that unusual?
No, I was going to say that they actually do that on their own. What you'll find is if you nearly completely discharge an alkaline battery and some types of rechargeable batteries, that if you just kind of let it sit there for a while, it will gain a little bit of its charge back. And it will, you know, if you just hook up a voltage gauge to it and say, oh, well, it's, you know, 50% of its charge capacity, Well, all that is showing is your voltage. If you were to put it into like a flashlight or something, you'll notice when you turn the flashlight on, the light comes back on again.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
Very quickly.
Yeah, and it goes out. We should let the, I'm going to let him know that. We'll burst his bubble.
Yes.
Okay, Kevin, thanks. Next up we go to, is it the Litchfield, Kentucky? How do I pronounce that, Paul? Litchfield?
Hey, it's Litchfield.
Litchfield. George, right. But it's spelled L-E-I-T, right?
Yeah, I always call it Litchfield.
Yeah.
To try to remember how to spell it. I want to thank you and everyone at Coast to Coast for the wonderful forum and to tell you God bless you and the others.
Thank you so much.
Because you give us all a place to vent things that simply cannot occur in any other form or way.
That's very kind of you.
I wanted to tell you about something that happened to me. By the way, I'm your xenomorph hunter from 1970 in the Challenger. Do you remember me?
Yep, sure do.
Great. Okay, in 1971, we used to go out to an area that's northeast of Louisville, about 20 miles from downtown Louisville, called Oldham County, Covered Bridge Road. Now, I've looked on the Louisville ghost hunters and all that thing site, and they have very little on this place, but believe me, if I'd had the equipment then, which we did not have, unfortunately, I could have done the Blair Witch Project with no FX at all. The sounds were there. The strangeness was there. I often think that it was where two parallel dimensions simply overlapped. And now that people are starting to move in more and more, the high strangeness seems to have drifted away, which is not unusual, I think.
Has it moved someplace else, you think?
Possibly. I live 70 miles away. Litchfield is 70 miles away. We didn't want to live in the city anymore. We spent 7.5 years in Texas. In fact, I called you once about the chupacabra-like creature, and I saw one in my backyard. And from nose to tail, it was 7 feet long.
Jeez.
And I had a full-grown Belgian Shepherd then, and he reacted to it too. Now, I may be fooled. He can't be fooled.
He can't be fooled at all. And this thing stood up on its hind legs? Or is it on fours?
No, it kind of slipped along. My wife said she thought it was a coyote, and I took him to the door, and they do not bark when they're on defensive. They're an incredibly unique and wonderful animal. And no, he did not. And I reached for a rifle and did not find one because I do not consider this to be an intelligent life form. I think that, as I've said before, you know, every time someone catches one, they take them to Texas A&M. They say, no, it's this, it's that. Well, that's taking the chicken to the hen house, because we had talked once before about that's where Project Misiplicity and all the animal cloning started. And I believe it's a weaponized animal of some kind. But the story I wanted to tell you about is in 1971, I had a friend at school, and I can't recall his name. I'm sorry, he's a little 50-something things. And he said, oh, I don't believe any of that hogwash about Sleepy Hollow. And I said, I had another friend, Scott, and I said, well, you come out with us. And we walked up the side of a hill, and there were four of us, myself, Tommy, this young man that I can't remember, and we kept hearing something that sounded like someone took a 100-pound sack of potatoes and threw it out of a tree.
Jeez.
And I could detect something. My hearing's pretty sharp, and my dad was born in 03, so the woods were, you know, home to me. He taught me from day one how to hunt and navigate and all that good stuff. And I said, well, let's just stop. I whispered it. And we stopped. We could hear this thing step along another three or four steps, and I said, gentlemen, we're being hunted. I mean,
you could feel that. You knew that.
And I could hear it, because we would just arbitrarily stop, and I could hear this thing take a few more steps, and it was down into our left, which is down a heavy bank. And what ended up happening, this other friend of mine said, well, it was a three-quarter moon. There was snow on the ground, although it was starting to melt. A warm front was coming in, but at that time, in the cool weather, it was kind of, you know, bright, and there were no leaves on the trees. So I just want to look over top of this and see. And I said, well, we'll just wait here for you. And all of a sudden, this thing started up the side of this hill about 20 yards down, making the most god-awful snarling, snorting noise in it. And I've hunted Kentucky. I'm familiar with Kentucky. I'm here now. There's no animal here from a cougar to a bobcat to deer to wild hog that I'm not familiar with. And I thought, oh, my God, I don't know what this thing is.
And you never saw it?
Well, what I did is I got down on the ground where I could see underneath the foliage, and I could see this thing coming, and it was low and broad, maybe twice the width of a bear and twice the height, and I was scared. I mean,
jeez.
All I had was a hunting knife. The other guy
That's
didn't
huge.
Have anything. It was huge. I mean, it sounded like a caterpillar, you know, with a D6 or D7 coming up the side of that hill. I mean, it was just snapping foliage left and right.
How the heck you get out of there?
Well, what I did is I called my friend. I said, look, we're in trouble. I said, get back here quick. I said, we are in trouble. And he came running down the hill. And when there were four of us together, this thing started to grunt and snort, and it backed off.
It backed off. Smart enough to panic on that, huh?
Well, I mean, three of us, apparently, it was willing to take on, but four, I think it was unsure. So it showed intelligence. Well, my girlfriend, who is now my wife, and who'd seen many unusual things there, we've had missing time there. I mean, I'm going to write a book about it. That interesting.
Did it ever get close enough, Paul, that you could really describe it?
No, only in shadow, because, you know, the moon was starting to set and it was behind it, and I could only see it in shadow because I stayed down on, you know, my knees and looked. And I was just sure that, you know, this thing was so powerful. But we came back the next day, and, of course, the melt had happened. And we saw tracks up the hill, but we couldn't get a good track. This thing had broken off tree limbs.
Jeez.
3 inches in diameter and small saplings.
Could it have been a huge bear?
Possibly, George. I guess it could have been, but I've never known of one to make a sound like that. And that kind of power, I mean, it broke them off 2 feet off the ground.
You know, Paul, you, I'm glad you got out of there because that thing could have ripped you guys apart. Let's go to New Jersey now. It's Randy's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Randy.
Hi, how are you, George?
Okay.
I'd like to talk about all the people that seem to be seeing strange animals while driving.
That seems to be all over the place. How about you?
I think it's kind of dumb because most of these guys say they're driving at night, and I'm imagining most of them, they're up really late, and they're probably sleep-deprived.
Well, maybe some of them are. Maybe some, but not all of them. I mean, we just get too many of these stories.
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, you know, any time of the day, I mean, mind's a tricky thing. You could see illusions at any moment.
Could be, and maybe in some cases they're seeing a human standing by the side of the road who disappears or something like that.
Well, I imagine, you know, you get a lot of reports they're doing it on the highway. When you're going 60, 70 miles an hour, anything can look like different things.
Well, no, that's true. I mean, you've got to weigh in the possibility that a lot of these things people are seeing, they are sleep deprived, but then there's a huge number of people that are actually seeing something very strange and unusual. And you can't rule that out. That's a possibility. Jason in San Francisco, you're up. Hi, Jason.
Hey, George.
How are you?
Thanks for having me, George.
Sure thing.
I just wanted to talk about the birds that have been dying and the fish that have been dying.
What do you think's going on there?
Well, here's what I think, George. You know, I read something recently about North Dakota, about hundreds of thousands of fish dying after a massive rain. And I think that this rain has a high amount of perhaps core exit 9500, which was the, you know, the chemical dispersant that BP used during the oil disaster.
Good point.
And the thing is, those red-winged blackbirds are migratory birds that pass through the Gulf.
Good point.
They're eating contaminated fish, or they're exposed to any of this, like, you know, I've heard things about you know, the core exit 9500 turning into, you know, toxic rain.
I wonder if they're testing
evaporate.
For
this. Huh?
I wonder if they're testing for this. They must be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, and I think this is just the beginning of the kind of stuff we're going to see. I think you're going to see illnesses in people, perhaps. Agriculture, you know, things, crops dying because of this kind of rain, this toxic rain that's like four times more toxic than oil. So, I mean, this core exit 9500 is pretty nasty stuff.
Jason, you might be onto something with this.
That's what I think. That's what I think is going on. I don't think it's some kind of, I think the government's trying to explain away what's happening because they're afraid that, you know, there's going to be a lot of lawsuits.
But this still would be technically man-made created.
Right. It is. Well, it is.
The,
I mean,
lawsuit would be huge.
I've just been listening to, you know, a lot of stuff about this, and I just sort of came to my mind, and I thank you for having me on, and that's about it, George.
I've seen a lot of people with respiratory infections and problems breathing, more so now than ever, and it's not the flu. There's something else out there, too. Mount Vernon, Washington, we go. It's Robert's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Robert, thanks.
Hi, George. I have a story to tell. It's not a long story, but I promise it has nothing to do with sleep deprivation. First of all, thanks so much for being back on in Seattle.
Sure thing.
It's so great to have you here. I never thought I'd tell this story to anyone, let alone on a national radio program, but back in the 80s, the mid-80s, I was a construction worker. I used to carry sheetrock. And I worked on the East Coast at a university. There were three of us on our team, and we had to get security clearance to work in this particular university. It's world-renowned university, let's just put it that way. And we were told ahead of time that we had to be extremely careful what rooms we went into. We were to stay in the certain rooms we were working in. They told us there were certain things going on, like cats being raised in total darkness, and we certainly couldn't open doors or anything. Me and my partner were moving some sheetrock down the hallway, and we had dropped it off, and we were going back, and we were going, my friend opened the doorway to what he thought was a stairwell, and it turned out to be a room. And in this room was a gigantic rabbit, and it was as big as we were. It was white, and it was tan, and it was had some greens in its mouth, and there was a small pool of blood inside the cage. And we looked at each other, and we slowly backed out of the room, and we quickly went and we looked for the place we were supposed to go to, and we never told anyone about it. And this is the first time I've told this story to anyone, and it's probably going to be the last time I tell this story to anyone.
Do you think they made this thing, genetically altered it?
Well, you know, I wasn't going to tell the story until I heard your guest telling the various stories about government, the possibilities of government being involved in things. And, I guess you open the wrong door sometimes, and we certainly did.
That would have been frightening, I'll tell you. A rabbit that size. Almost like Harvey. Remember that one? We'll be back with final open line calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And always keep looking at the coasttocoastam.com website. Occasionally, we will put up that Insta poll for you of various questions, topical, related to some of the shows of the moment. And we're getting incredible data there. You know, it's a professional poll now because so many people respond. You know, it's got a plus or minus accuracy rate of 5%. Most major pollsters would love to have that vehicle. So always keep your eyes out. You'll find it in the highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com. Let's go back to the phones. Joe is in Ontario, Canada, and he's up with us. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hey, George. Great. Glad to catch you on the show.
Super.
It's a lot to my question, but to cut to the chase, I stumbled upon, biblical floods and earthquakes and storms, blah, blah, blah. I got this space astronomy pack, and what I did is I put myself on the sun, and then you blast yourself off the sun about 300,000 to a million miles, and then you watch all the planets' alignments. And it seems that every time we have a historical or biblical thing happening, just as just passing now, we're having these alignments that are within 20, 22 degrees. And I was just curious if anybody's ever pointed that out to you.
No, that's pretty astute on your part. This is weird, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I just kind of stumbled upon it. My neighbor's a weather chaser there, storm chaser, so... And I don't know, I just got looking up and got this program, and you can go back to the Great Alaskan Earthquake, the tsunami. You can like click the calendar ahead or back, right? So, I don't know, it's just I thought Richard Hoagland might be interested in that little tidbit. Or.
Okay, great. We'll pass that on. Thanks, Joe. 2011, though, what a very fascinating time to be alive. This is going to be an interesting year. I can feel it now. And believe me, it's going to be a roller coaster, so hold on. Let's go to southern Indiana. Tyler's with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Tyler.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Thanks for holding.
Oh, you're welcome. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. Very nice of you to ask. What's up?
I was calling about the last guest you had on about the werewolf.
Yes, Linda.
Yeah, it was the day after Thanksgiving. Me and my dad were coyote hunting in southern Indiana on a private farm because he had coyote problems.
Okay.
And my dad went into the house, and I was sitting there, and it was like 10:30 at night or whatever. And I see this thing. It looks like a wild dog at first. Then I see it get up on its two legs. And I was, like, awkward. Then it, like, but like if there was a coyote biting, like, got scared and ran off. So I'm not sure what it was.
Did it walk at all on those two legs or just kind of stand up?
Yeah, it walked.
That's weird.
Then it seen me, it snarled at me. My stepdad came back out. My stepdad had seen it, and he, like, had a high-powered rifle, shot at it. Because it was like it growled at him also. This is probably 40 yards away.
Nothing like you've ever seen before, Tyler.
No. And he shot at it, and he hit it, like, it looks like he hit it in the lungs, but you hear it roar, but when we look, there's no blood trail whatsoever.
No blood, nothing. And it just ran away?
Yeah.
Strange creatures. Man, they're everywhere. Okay, thanks for that, Tyler. Next up we go to Palm Desert, California. John is on the wild card line. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. Everything's great. Thanks.
So, I heard that the Mayan calendar ended abruptly because they ran out of ink.
or chisels or whatever they did. Huh?
Something, yeah. You know, I mean, really, I'm not really concerned with the Mayan calendar. I'm more concerned with the swimsuit calendar.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
I think that has a little bit, you know, that can make 2012, you know, very nice. You know,
I want us to get through 2011 before we even have to worry about 2012.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, something's going to happen, right?
I feel it. I don't know what it is.
What do you feel is going to happen, like major, from your instinct? Because I think you have great instinct.
I think there's going to be some kind of Earth calamity based on Earth changes. I've always said that I think the sun is going to do something, but it just, I don't know, people just are out of kilter. There's just, you know, like when you're walking down the street and you can just feel this odd sensation. I've been feeling that for about a year now, but it's getting more and more prevalent.
It seems like there's like more fear mongering, you know, that seems like, you know, more of that. I seem to sense that. You know,
yeah, and people are more uptight.
Yeah, and then all these movies, George, all these movies about, you know, I saw this one, you see this movie called The Knowing?
Yeah, I was just talking about that. It was a great movie.
Man, that to me is very scary. I mean, in 2012, I saw it in 2012, I kind of laughed. I thought it was something, you know, absurd, you know, Hollywood, you know, special effects. But that Knowing... You know, because you were talking about the solar flare and how it's going to destroy the solar system or the planets, or, you know, something like this.
What a great ending. But, I thought Nicolas Cage did a great job in that.
Yeah, he was great in that. Yeah, his acting was good. And, it definitely brings a point to, you know, all this stuff that's leading up to this thing. And I heard one of your guests one time, you have somebody, a very prominent person about the, not about the Mayan calendar, very serious, but in the middle of the Mayan calendar, there's this face that has a tongue sticking out.
Yes.
And that he said, that is the sun that's going to speak to us in 2012.
Well, John Major Jenkins, and anything can happen.
Yeah, he was the one that said that. And I thought, wow, that's very, you know, that's the for him, the way he put it like that is that. But how did they figure out? I mean, I wondered, can this solar flare maybe go the other way instead of, like, coming towards the Earth? Because, you know, it's, you know, there's...
Well, we've been lucky. We've been dodging some pretty big flares, solar flares. They call them coronal mass ejections. That, you know, have gone away from the planet or off the side of the sun. We've been lucky. I just hope we never get hit with the big one directly, because let me tell you something, the grid will go down, and this entire planet is based on electrical power these days. Everything is done that way. Everything. There's nothing done by hand anymore. They wouldn't even know how to sell you groceries. Let's go to Jay in Terre Haute, Indiana. Hi, Jay. Welcome to the program.
Oh, wow. I was beginning to think it's impossible to actually get through.
You did it. You did it.
Well, thank you very much. I've got dozens of questions, but I'm only going to ask you one.
Okay.
You really do have a handle on science. I listen to you talk. I listened to, if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Michio Kaku,
the great physicist that he is.
Right. As a matter of fact, I had never heard of him, but I was reading one of my trade publications online, ECN, Electronic Component News. I'm in electronics. And there was an article and a picture of him, about him. And he's very highly considered.
Yes.
And Linda Moulton Howe and all these other folks that you guys have, but I've never heard anybody ask about this, and it's mystified me, for lack of a better description. The odds, what are the odds? You look up at the moon in an evening. The all moon right. always has its face towards you.
Yes.
It appears that the moon doesn't rotate, but the reality must be that the moon rotates exactly, precisely once a day, because it's always got its face towards us.
All constantly.
Well, it's got to rotate because we don't see the, quote, dark side of the moon from the song, Dark Side of the Moon. Regardless, what are the odds? What are the odds that in this world the moon rotates exactly, precisely? I mean, maybe 1.25 times a day, maybe 30 times a day, but it's just once a day. Exactly.
Well, it has this synchronous rotation with the Earth, and I'm wondering if it had
How?
To do, I don't know. I wonder if it had anything to do with, you know, with the gravity and everything else, but it is bizarre. It's almost like somebody turned them on at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I've not heard any of your, and you've got some really grounded science people who, not to mention Art Bell, who's a ham and, you know, goes way back with electronics as I do. Nobody's discussed this. Nobody's come up with any theories. I've not even heard anybody mention it.
And they say the moon rotates at a constant rate as well, but it's like right in step with us.
How? How? It doesn't even make sense from a just what are the odds? If you toss a coin, in theory, half the time it's going to be heads, half the time tails. The odds are so far against the moon rotating exactly. I mean, it's been doing this not for just 1 or 2 years.
Forever.
Bingo.
Yep. And I know it's a strange one. And one of the things you don't think about every day, but you're absolutely right. Let's go to Bo in Memphis, Tennessee, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Bo.
Hey, George, how you doing tonight?
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I was just going to give an observation towards, I'm pretty close to all the birds and the fish dying here in Arkansas.
Yeah, okay. What do you think's going on? What's your take?
What I really think is going on is that animals have a reaction to major events as far as geological or storms or things like that. And there's a major fault that runs right through Martree, Arkansas.
Is it the New Madrid?
That's right. I couldn't think of it. But I actually believe that this is a pretext to a massive earthquake that's going to hit this area. And
well, let me tell you.
In the 1890s, it caused the Mississippi River to run backwards.
Yes, it was huge.
It caused
a
real foot lake. And, you know, sometimes you just have to pay attention to nature. And
I didn't rule that out either. It's very possible. You know, remember when the tsunami hit in Indonesia years ago? All the animals, land-based animals, before the tsunami hit, they knew it. They could feel it. They were gone. They went for the hills.
Yeah, and I have one other thing that I think might cause the earthquake, which has been some drilling for natural gas here in Arkansas, and they developed a new method of drilling for natural gas that has caused 3-point earthquakes here in Arkansas, and it's become, you know, it's been on my news locally and things like that. People are asking them to stop this type of drilling because it's disturbing the earth, or at least stop it until they get scientific.
Well, if you're right and these animals are dying based on some kind of stress or something related to an some kind of major earth event, that event has got to be pretty soon then, right?
Maybe between it might be the 2012 thing, you know, or coming up and recently in 2011, but I would like to hope that the people who are drilling for this natural gas through these new methods would just stop and take studies to see what effect it's actually going to
Bo, probably they will never, ever do the right thing, and that is do a study. Well, we're running out of time here. Greg in Missouri. Hey, Greg, just wish everybody good night for me, would you?
Hey, George, in a truck going across Missouri here.
Super, super. Just wish them all good night. For Dave Bujinski, Dan Galante, Jason King, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there in Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition, Ian on Saturday, Whitley Strieber and Ann Strieber hosting on Sunday. Until then, be safe, everyone.